Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Yeah, that's Catherine. She thinks she's a radio voice now. I had to correct her.
Sounds much better than you.
Shut up, okay? The, joining me, I meant to say, is, Bob Nelson. I didn't mean to say shut up. It just came out of my
mouth. Good morning, Mac.
It just came out of my mouth. Come on. If you knew how many takes it took to get that one right, it's a joke. Yeah. Okay, say it again. All right, come on.
Hey, I've got a question for you.
Yes.
Do senior Marine officers generally last when they're in the mess with other Marine officers?
Yeah, you're in the back of the bus.
I heard somebody in your mess hall was eating all the chicken wings and pizza first, out of order.
What? Chicken wings and pizza first?
In your kitchen, eating all the good food first before the junior officers came in?
Okay, I don't know how you know about that whiny bitch, but let me tell you, okay? He comes home yesterday. How the hell would you know about this? So anyway, he comes home yesterday, okay, the whiny bitch first lieutenant, who's now a snitch. Anyway, he comes home, and he says, he doesn't even say anything. The dogs react. I'm watching the Yankee game. They won in 13 innings, by the way.
And that's one, too.
We don't care about the Nats. We only care about the Yankees on All Marine Radio. I don't even know he's home. I then go out in the kitchen and open the fridge for something, and I see two boxes. So, blah, blah, blah. I have to go get my daughter. So I go get Colleen, and I come home, and now he's out laying on the couch. And I said, what's up? And nothing. So we finished watching the Yankee game. It was took a long time because it was 13 innings. And so I said, have you had dinner? He said, yeah, I already ate. And he said, there's some food left. It's in the refrigerator, but there's not very much. Okay. I go out and I look. A couple pieces of pizza. So I ask Colleen, I said, you want some pizza? She says, yeah. So I heat it up and I give it. And there's like maybe five or six chicken wings that I eat. So now, I don't know, 30 minutes later or so, he goes out in the kitchen and he comes back and goes, where are the pizza boxes? And I said, they're in the garbage. He's like, you ate all that food? I said, bro, there wasn't that much. You said there wasn't that much. He's like, you ate it all, though. I'm like, shit happens, man. What do you do when you like eat all the food all the time? So like the shoe's on the other foot, and now you're going to act like a bitch? He's like, oh, what up? So, you know, it's part of growing up, Bob. Part of growing up.
I don't know. That sounds like a senior Marine officer eating first.
Oh, you know what? I ate last. He ate. There was leftovers, but there wasn't very much. And being a senior officer, I accepted that. Like, okay, I'm not going to eat that much tonight. And then I feed my daughter first, and I take what's left over. That is quintessentially. But when your troops all of a sudden decide they want to go back for seconds, I'm sorry, you got to go to the back of the line. You don't get to cut in front of the senior officer who hasn't eaten yet and is eating scraps. Yeah, that's how that shit works. And Maria asked me how I know that. Because when I was a second lieutenant, I ate, like, lettuce and ice a couple times out in 29 Palms after a hard day's work. And so we had a big discussion about portion controls. Okay? Like, okay, you ass clowns that are up there scooping, right, from the vat chow that came out on the truck that we were in the back of the line salivating for, and then we get to the front, and there was a little bit of lettuce in ice water and French dressing if you cared to dump that out on it and eat it too. But there was nothing else to eat, so you had no choice. So then we had like, okay, can we circle the wagons here? Who was scooping chow tonight? Staff Sergeant Gunny, you bring your dumb asses over here, okay? And they thought at first it was moderately humorous. And so I've done that dance.
I thought this would be a great way to start off.
Oh, yeah. See, I didn't even know. I got a text message from him about 30 minutes ago that said, I called for fire on your position. Now, I didn't have my secret decoder ring on, so I didn't know what he meant. And I just saw the message when we in the last commercial break. And I just responded. And so here's what I thought. I thought he was in some kind of simulator down at Pendleton doing Call for Fire. And they were using a map of Southern California, so he called for fire on my house. I didn't realize that he had contacted you, given you that information to turn on me. Okay? And so what
I needed some secret shit on Michael McNamara.
Oh, shit. So anyway, so he, so I text back, bro, get over the food issue, man. Act like an adult for once in your life. He has not responded yet. So anyway. All right, 2 years, hard to believe, starting our third year. And somebody sent me an email the other day and said, hey, Mac, you've been doing this for a while. What have you learned about transitioning and what have you learned about mental health? And I thought, well, you know, it's that would be a good thing for me to be Bob on to talk about as the patron saint of All Marine Radio. Let me ask you this question because somebody sent this to me the other day. Mac, I'd be curious to know what Bob saw in All Marine Radio that made him latch on to it. So you don't know me. You hear from a guy who used to be associated with All Marine Radio. And what appealed to you about the idea?
Well, as you know, Michael, I've been I was in 50 years ago in Vietnam and spent a career in construction, and then 16 years ago decided to sneak in the back door at Bethesda Naval Hospital and say hello to some of the wounded. And one thing led to another, and it became a four-day-a-week process, and then I did it at Walter Reed, and then I raised money for scholarships.
Okay, hold on. So the way this starts is you just went to Walter Reed as a veteran and started saying hi to guys?
As the Naval Hospital, because I'd been a Marine liaison when I got back from Vietnam in St. Albans.
Okay.
And so I figured these kids are going to come in, nobody's going to visit them like Vietnam. Somebody ought to go in and say hello and thank you.
Okay,
and
so
I went over, went through the gate and said, I want to speak to Marine liaison. I talked to a warrant officer, and he took me up to the ICU, and we saw some patients. And one thing led to another. And
Let me ask you about that. So you were doing that in Vietnam, what, 69, 70, 68, 69?
No, I was doing that in 67. I got back in 67. I'd broken my leg. I was a patient at St. Albans for about a month, and then they made me the Marine liaison at St. Albans and the Marine legal officer at Marine Barracks, Brooklyn.
Okay.
And I did that for about 6 months and decided to go back to career in construction.
Okay. So now.
And we had 1,000 patients and me as a captain and two sergeants who didn't know our ass from first base trying to help 1,000 wounded. And the difference was we didn't have any visitors other than family and friends. There were, you know, nobody come see these wounded. So we pretty much had them to ourselves, except for family and friends. Much, much different environment than it is now. And so 16 years ago when we went into Iraq, I said, this is not going to be over 90 days. It's going to be a long, drawn-out process, and I suspect we're going to have a fair number of wounded. And unfortunately, it all came true. So I did that, and I helped.
Okay, hold on.
So, scholarships.
So you go there. And talk to me about walking in the ICU for the first time. So you're no stranger to this dance. You've seen it before.
No, I've done it 1,000 times 50 years ago.
Okay, so how had it changed in 50 years?
Well, the first thing was going in the ICU was a mistake because they ain't talking in ICU when they're got tubes and oxygen masks and everything else on. So I said, take me to the patient floor. This is ridiculous. They didn't even know I was there. So we went to a patient floor, and I'd go in and say, you know, I'm Bob Nielsen. I was in the Marines in Vietnam, and 9 out of 10 would try to get out of bed and thank me. And they had some amputees and some brain injuries and some, you know, assortment of injuries. But that's all I needed to say, and they would open up. And in most cases, they'd already seen their family. Some cases, they hadn't even seen their family. But they wanted to talk about what they'd been through. And man for man, woman for woman, within their first two sentences, they'd say they wanted to go back. And I was kind of taken back by this, because that's pretty amazing spirit when you've just been blown up. And I'd go in there, and I'd listen to these kids, and the whole key is in mentoring is listening. You don't want to talk about yourself. You don't want to say all the great things you did or didn't do. They don't want to hear that crap. They want to talk about what they've been doing. And I go back and get on the metro and go across D.C. to where my car was parked, thinking, you know, holy shit, I can't believe what I just saw. And, you know, some days I'd actually be riding on the metro crying because, you know, you're talking to a 20-year-old kid blown apart, and he's gung-ho and optimistic and upbeat. And I'm looking at him and saying, what in the world possesses this kid to want to go do it again?
Yeah.
And, you know, you could see it and feel it. So I was doing this, and I started some scholarships in health, and then we got them jobs in the construction industry, and then I started doing classes. But when a wounded Marine named Travis Green down in Texas, who designed prosthetic feet, he's a double above knee amputee, said, one day he calls me and says, Bob, you gotta listen to All Marine Radio. I said, what the hell is that? And he said, go to their website and go listen to a podcast and listen live. And I said, this is phenomenal because this guy's talking about shit that everybody needs to be talking about. Of course, nobody on active duty is going to talk about that stuff.
No.
But you were beginning to get into the subject of recovery and reentry into the civilian world. And then gradually, the more you dealt with it, how you deal with the issues of post-traumatic growth, and then the whole separate segment of caregivers. And you were out talking to the world about something that, you know, in my mind, 50 people in the whole world knew anything about. You know, I'd see it because I'd see it at Walter Reed and Bethesda.
Right.
But the average civilian I know has no clue. So you were getting out and talking about this and talking about examples and talking to veterans that have been through it. And I probably introduced you to 10 wounded veterans that you've interviewed, and each one gets more credible than the other. But as you know, and we've discussed it, there's only one way to deal with this post-traumatic growth, and that's get the brain occupied with something you're passionate about and talk to others about it. You've got to talk about what you've been through. You can't sit in the closet and turn out the lights and think you're going to solve the problem.
No, and you know what? Just
to me, it was magic. You're conveying the messages I was beginning to try to get out.
Saint Mac the Apostle.
Well, it might really be, it was. It was magical that you had the ability to do that.
It might be overstated a little bit, but nonetheless, I have visions of Paul the Apostle.
The God is the apostle. You're kind of his right hand man.
Shit. He is not even close to being an apostle, okay? He lies too much. You can't be an apostle and lie like he lies.
No, he just gives you some alternate facts.
There you go. Wilson, you know what? For a commissioned officer, you slipped right into the enlisted form of thinking right there very easily. Very nice. All right, let's talk about transitioning. Okay? I want to talk about transitioning, then I want to talk about mental health. Transitioning. You've seen a lot of guys transition. You've seen what we do well, what we do bad. And you know, the whole 100 Entrepreneurs program is designed as a kind of
seed.
Yeah.
The idea of being your own businessman.
So it's a conduit for people that have an entrepreneur bent to them, might be interested in construction or the trades, and you've developed that.
No, it's two separate things. The entrepreneurs are in any kind of field you can imagine. of the 230, 240 we've helped, it's almost 200 different kinds of businesses, from fly tying to custom guns to campgrounds for wounded. It's everything. But parallel to that, I worked on a program with Turner where 10% of the professional staff they hire for careers every year, we want to be veterans that have had combat tours.
Okay.
And we look at the combat tour, and it's taken a while to get everybody to understand this, as the equivalent of a college degree.
You know what?
In my mind, I think it's a lot more.
Yeah, no shit. If you're problem solving in that kind of, you know, in that kind of environment, you might want
to... Yeah, well, they send you to some shithole with 30 people and go figure out how to get it done and get resupplied and be able to get your wounded out. You can sure as hell build a goddamn building there.
No kidding. No kidding. You know, so I misunderstood. I thought 100 entrepreneurs was just devoted to construction in the trades.
No. It's to get people to start entrepreneurship and anything they want to do. And literally, if you look at a couple of newsletters I sent around, I think I sent them to you,
right.
It shows some of the 200-odd different kinds of businesses, bakeries, restaurants, bars, you name it. Going into physical therapy, gyms, it's all over the map. And it's picking something that you're passionate about and then go doing it. And then we've helped a lot of vets with franchises because a lot of the franchises make special exemptions for veterans to get into that.
Right.
And believe it or not, we've had a tremendous amount of wounded veterans getting into farming. Every kind of farming you can imagine.
Marijuana farming?
Yes. Woman that lost her arm in a motorcycle accident got one up in the state of Washington right now. Big one, and it's working well.
I hear there's demand for that product.
It's a tough field to get into because there's a lot of competition, and needless to say, there's a lot of money chasing rainbows.
Right. Right. I could smell it coming over my fence now, so I know it's popular. So let's talk about best practices relative to transitioning. You've seen this probably more than anybody I know, going back to your post-Vietnam experience. Give me some golden rules of transition.
Well, what I've seen, and I was a member of Marine Executive Association for 20-something years. I got involved in them in the 80s when I moved back here to the East Coast in Washington, who were helping mainly junior officers, but some senior officers and some senior enlisted transition. And what I learned and discovered was these guys are finishing 20, 25 years, having had great successes, you know, maybe they've an E-8 or an E-9 or a major or a colonel, and they're so proud of when they were a company commander or a squadron commander or whatever else, and they're scared shitless about the civilian world.
Right.
And they've relied on the military and what it does well to give you guidance and direction of what you're going to be doing, but the civilian world was wide open. And as I got to know and help guys doing that, I realized that they didn't know diddly squat about the civilian world, that there were tons of opportunities, that the skills and strengths they were bringing to the civilian world, they didn't even know they had. Somebody might not give a shit that you were a battalion commander, but if you've been on embassy duty in London or Karachi for 3 years and learned the diplomacy end of that kind of stuff and all the other intricacies that go along with it, that's immensely valuable to the private sector. And so you've got to start educating yourself, in my opinion, 2 years before you get out, and not just the TAPS program and learning how to do the standard government form of resume. Learn what's really out there. Learn about yourself so you realize and understand the things that you're passionate about. You know, one of the reasons Turner likes military veterans is the guys and gals we hire like leadership. They like taking a group of people and leading them to go get something accomplished. Well, that works in the private sector. It really, really fits. So you got to learn about yourself, and you got to learn about the industries, and you got to learn about your strengths. Now, for a long time after Vietnam, you couldn't even put on a resume that you were a veteran. I mean, for the first 15 years after the war, you didn't dare do that. Now you can, and you should put in the special overseas assignments, the combat assignments, decorations and awards you've got. The average civilian might not know a Purple Heart from a Bronze Star, but it shows that somebody recognized something you've done.
You know, let me just tell you, I got told as recently as 3 years ago, don't put that stuff on your resume because they'll say they want to hire you, but at the end of the day, they're terrified of that stuff. But you're telling me the exact
thing? Some are, but I believe it belongs there. And in fact, I want to stick it right in their nose because they don't want to hire me. I want to know it right up front. And I started putting anything I did in the Marine Corps on my resume in the mid-'80s, and I didn't give a shit. Because if you don't like me because of that, I don't want to be working for you in the first place.
Okay. All right. No, I was surprised. So, I was surprised when I heard that when I got ready to get out and I was casting about for advice, and that came back from multiple, you know, guys. Do not put that, you know, you've been in places like Ramadi and Fallujah, and because you are going to get broad brushed, and they're going to say, and you'll go through the interview process, and then somebody else will get the job, and they will never say it, but I know that I was the most qualified and probably the best candidate on two separate occasions.
And that can happen. But don't put 3 pages of every 2 week goddamn combat tour you're on. But, you know, put a paragraph, and I said, listen, I did an 8-month tour in Iraq in, 2007, and I did a 6-month tour in Afghanistan in 2011. Let them know that you've actually gone out there and done something, because, boy, that's a hell of a lot better than the average civilian that hasn't done jack shit.
All right, so there's
people that really count in hiring will recognize that.
All right. That, you know what? Again, I was surprised. I was a bit taken aback by it, but I had a little bit of an experience like that when I applied for a job and with a park and rec department where I lived in North Dakota, and they said they, you know, veterans had preferential hiring. So, you know, I had a pretty decent resume. I didn't get interviewed.
Yeah.
I didn't even get interviewed. And I
thought, and that, it does go on. I mean, it exists out there. But believe me, if you'd gotten hired, you wouldn't want to be there anyway.
Right.
Because if that kind of thinking is permeating that unit, you don't want to be there. You don't want to waste your time working for an asshole. And I found out my whole career, the time you spend working for assholes ain't worth it.
Interesting.
And you can interpret that any way you want.
I don't know that there's too many ways to interpret that. I'm not the smartest guy. I'm not the smartest guy but I don't know how many different ways that I can interpret that shit.
But you see, now, you, without ever having met you, I would just look at this guy. He's a reservist. He was activated. He got out of the Marine Corps, and then he went back in. But bingo, right standing in 6-foot-tall leathers, because he did 3 combat tours. Well, that to me, as a guy that's a veteran, tells me a whole lot. Holy shit, there's something there that I want to know a lot more about. And he didn't get fired, and he didn't get court-martialed, and he didn't get put in the brig. Damn, there's something going on there that I want to know about, because I think there's real value in that in the civilian world.
Okay, so you put that in there, and you don't get hired. Then what do? You take it out?
You go to the next one. Shit, no. You go to the next guy. Okay. The next company that's in that industry.
Okay.
And, you know, if you look at the construction companies, there's, I don't know, 75,000 construction companies or 100,000. You go to the next one. Or better yet, you use a network of people and say, hey, what do you think of this company? What do you think of this company? You know, I've been on All Marine Radio probably 10 times now. Anybody could call me and say, hey, I heard of this construction company in San Francisco. It's Anvil. It's pretty good. It was owned by a vet. What do you think? So happens I know him because a wounded vet owned it. Go work there. It's a good place. You know, there's a network. One thing, Mac, you never burn the bridges behind you, but there's a network of people out there that talk. And if you've been in the industry for a while, it's amazing the track record you've got behind you.
Okay, so if I'm...
ask questions.
So I'm not going to... I'm going to include my combat deployments. I'm not going to elaborate on them, but I list those. And then I've got to do a little bit of research into who's hiring veterans these days. Now, let me ask you about that because I'm curious about your thoughts because one of the things that's very different, and I'll let you comment on how different it is between now and Vietnam, is the number of programs like 100 Entrepreneurs, like Dog Tag Bakery, like Foursquare,
right.
These fellowship programs that are open to veterans, you can...
Entrepreneur boot camp at the colleges.
Right, and just, you know, just absolutely amazing stuff.
Right.
You got to familiarize yourself with the landscape. If you don't, you're stupid.
That's right.
Your thoughts on all those different programs and the opportunities now that are there when you transition for current veterans?
Well, the beauty of it, Mac, and this really applies to the wounded, you could be in the hospital, badly wounded, an amputee, and you can get on your computer and you can check out Dog Tag Bakery. You can check out Entrepreneur Boot Camp. You can check out Yellow Ribbon Fund. You can check out Boulder Crest and see what they're doing for veterans, and is there something there that fits me? Is there something there that interests me? I've had guys get into Healing Waters, the organization that takes vets out fly fishing and teaches them all about that, and actually go into business associated with fly fishing and stuff along that line. But you can literally do it all on the Internet, but then start calling some people there. You'll see a lot of these organizations are run by veterans, and reach out and talk to them. And they'll love to talk to you. But don't just rely on some TATS program to come in and say you got to go to this job fair over near the Pentagon where there's 7,000 guys that work for government contractors purportedly hiring veterans. That's not going to, in my opinion, that's not going to lead very far.
Why?
I'm not a big fan of job fairs. I just think the kind of what a lot of them are doing is just trying to hire veterans so they can exhibit their veterans on Memorial Day and Veterans Day and say, oh, look what we've done. I think you're much better off interacting one-on-one directly with the company.
All right, here's an email. Mac, I love when you have Bob on, and I'm with you. If he already ate once, that's on him. All right, this obviously is an enlightened human being. Something Bob said resonated with me, and it's a mistake I made in my transition. I did not correct it until about 5 years in to my civilian work, and I had to restart my career a little bit. I did not go down the road of doing something I was passionate about and wanted to do. I think that's the single most important thing you decide. Everything else will take care of itself with hard work, and I think most veterans are willing to roll up their sleeves and work hard. I went to a job fair, I got hired, and I wound up getting to middle-level management and promoted twice before I realized that I didn't like what I was doing. It was drudgery. I wound up hating it. And then I had to go through a reflective period and really discover what I was passionate about and what I wanted to do in my life. Having a Marine Corps retirement helped and allowed me some benefits in transition for a second time, but I would say if you're going to do anything, focus on what you want. Now, if you're married with kids, you feel a tremendous amount of pressure to get a job that pays. I would tell you to take a little extra time and be willing to move maybe once, maybe twice over the course of a 5 or 6 year period to go get jobs that you like, places that will hire you so that you can come back to where you really want to be in the long term. And I heard a guy that you had on say something similar to that, a guy named Williamson that worked for Amazon, so I didn't feel as stupid once I heard that. But I put too much emphasis on making money and not enough emphasis on what would be best for me in the long term. I corrected it. I love what I do now, and I'm making pretty good money doing it because my passion is accelerated because it's something that I truly do want to do. Thoughts on that, Bob?
Mac, save that message. I've heard it 2,000 times, almost verbatim. He's absolutely right. And I was going to add before it came out at the end of the message, the least important thing when you're looking to go out and either start a company or get a job is salary. You want an environment that you're comfortable in, where you're doing something that you're passionate about. Salary will work its way out. I wouldn't even question the goddamn salary. Put that at the bottom of the list. And don't jump into the first thing that offers you something because, quote, the salary is, man, $10,000 more than I was making in the Marine Corps. You want something that you're interested in, the people there are, you're comfortable with, and you're going to be passionate doing. You want to do something that you want to get up early in the morning to be there to knock the ball out of the park. And I mean, this is just simple common sense stuff. This is no goddamn research science. But if you're interested in guns, if you're like Gunner, and you wanted to go work somewhere, start a business about Glock pistols. Shit, there's a zillion opportunities to do something with that. Right. You know, it could be Glock repair in your garage, customized Glock guns. But there's a million things you could do. And in the Gunner's case, you know he's passionate about that. He loves it.
Can you tell?
And that's think about when you're still on active duty.
No, but the email's right, and I think we've all gone through it, where you're a provider. You know, it's not just about – and really I think one of the things that veterans deal with is that, especially if you're a leader, it's never about you to include eating, right? Everybody else eats, and then I take care of myself. My kids, my wife, I provide for them, and my job satisfaction – isn't necessarily the number one thing that I'm looking at because I have to provide for them. And so it's, you know what I mean? It's almost an act of selfishness, it sounds like, to put that much emphasis on what I want to do.
The measuring stick, and I've told a lot of Marines when they're finishing up 20 or 20 plus years, you want to go somewhere where you can have as much passion about what you're doing as you had being a Marine. And 9 out of 10 look at me like I've lost my mind. They say, oh, shit, I could never love anything but as much as the Marine Corps. And I said, bullshit. You get with the right group doing the right thing, you're going to be every bit as passionate about that as you were with the Marine Corps. And I see them 20 years later, and they are. And you've taken all those good qualities that you've developed during your time in the military, and you're applying it in a new direction. It's using the common sense that you've learned through your time in the service, but start thinking about it 2 years before you're getting out. Don't wait till 30 days before discharge and say, oh, shit, I got to do a resume. You know, you're going to end up flipping hamburgers at McDonald's.
Yeah. My guest is St. Robert the First, Bob Nielsen, here on All Marine Radio. We've been on for a couple of years, and we're talking about best practices relative to transitioning. Give me another best practice relative to transitioning.
I think that you need to be realistic about where you want to be and what you want to do. You don't realize by being in the military that you probably worked in the course of 10 or 20 years in 15 different locations, from godforsaken places to fantastic places like Southern California and Hawaii. And because of that, you're probably a lot more flexible in where you can go. But that's not an individual decision. That's a family decision, and it's tough to deal with. And, you know, I've moved around the country with my family, and I spent many, many years where I was overseas 50% of the year. But you got to have a realistic understanding of what you're looking for, where you want to be geographically, and that kind of thing. And maybe it's going to take when you join the company, spending the year in a remote location to learn what they're doing before you get the location you really want. But you got to understand this stuff going in. And talk to other people that have made the transition. And, hell, if you've got a question, just send me an email. Give me a call at robertnao2@mac.com. I'll be happy to give you at least thoughts and ideas.
You know, when I heard that, when I heard that, I thought it was such good advice. It was Colby Williamson, fire team leader in Fallujah in 2004, now working for Amazon. But he said, you know, he said, I got out, I went to Florida State, and then I looked at my first 5 years after college as one more PCS move before I ultimately landed where I wanted to land. And I had to go out to some place that where I could get the job that I wanted and the experience that I needed to get on my resume to be competitive for other jobs that I wanted where I ultimately wanted to live. And now he's one of the directors of veteran hiring at Amazon. And he has a great job. He loves it. And he said, but, you know, I moved to Minneapolis because they were hiring there. And I was going to do that for a few years and punch my tickets and then begin to look for the jobs I wanted. And you hear that and you're like,
absolutely.
God, that's really smart. Why didn't I think of that? Why didn't they tell me that in TAP for crying out loud?
Don't say it. I had two speakers this Tuesday in Bethesda talking at 100 entrepreneurs. Well, I actually had four speakers, but two of them were vets, okay?
Okay.
One I met at Walter Reed 10 years ago, got badly wounded in Afghanistan, was in Walter Reed for a year and a half, almost 2 years, eventually lost a leg. And the other one I hadn't met, both West Point graduates. The one that was badly injured got out. I won't give you their names, but he got out and he went to Stanford MBA program. The other one got out of the Army and went to Harvard, and then they went to Boston to work for one of the big Boston consultants, the world-famous consultants up there.
Right.
Now, this is big bucks, big time, success, success, success. But he remembered, and he was thinking, and he told me this, sitting in my stupid little class with 20 wounded vets at Walter Reed, talking about 100 entrepreneurs and starting your own business. Well, these two guys got together, started their own business. They do consulting for firms that do government contracting and stuff like that. And they're doing great. And they took the bits and pieces and put it all together. Now, I told them, I said, you know, you got the best graduate schools in the country. You got working for one of the best companies in the country. But your 4, 5, 6 years in the Army probably did more to shape you into being successful as a businessman than the other shit put together. Because you learned the basics there. You learn how to take orders. You learn how to be self-sufficient. You learn how to be responsible for people. You learn all the qualities that are going to make you a good businessman. So it was great seeing them talk to our class. We had, you know, 20 wounded vets in the class listen to these guys. But now they have to take the graduate school route. That works for some people. It doesn't work for others. But it's really important to do that. So it was a success story, and it was one heaped on top of the other, which was really great. It made me feel a little old because now I got veterans coming back, telling them for a while.
Give me another one.
Well, I want to give you a little bit of a piece that kind of leads into dealing with the post-traumatic growth.
Okay.
Yesterday, I had lunch in D.C. with a buddy of mine who lost a leg in Vietnam, was an Army FO. He was a federal judge, and he happened to be a high school buddy. We went to high school together, and Jack is just an amazing person. He's been involved in Walter Reed forever and ever and ever. He got me involved in the peer visitor program over there. And the other guy was a fabulous doctor, psychiatrist from San Diego, who was born into the old Walter Reed when we were at the peak of wounded, just when we were kind of getting out of Iraq and going into Afghanistan. And he was born into Walter Reed actually put on the floor in the amputee center where people that were having problems really needed it. one of the problems with the military medical system, the VA system, if you need mental help, you know, they're great at setting up an appointment with you 3 weeks from now. But if you're suicidal or got other problems, getting an appointment 3 weeks from now ain't going to solve shit. Well, this doctor who's great, and I won't tell you his last name, but his name is Dr. Steve. He was actually a Vietnam veteran and been a psychiatrist for years. He'd be right there sitting on the mat in MATC, the amputee center, talking to vets when they needed to be talked to. And we were talking about the thing that I've been touting, that you got to fill that void in the head that creates all the problems when you interview the young man that got the Navy Cross talking about the monkeys in there, don't let them out of the cage.
Yep.
You got to be able to put something in that space in the head. And we found that if you can get people interested in the business and passionate about something and something they're enthusiastic about, and all of a sudden that begins to occupy that vacant space in the head. And now Jack and Dr. Steve and I were doing this for 10, 15 years together at Walter Reed, and we could see it. If you could get the vets interested in something, excited about something by the time they were leaving, and I don't care whether it was making exotic bird calls or setting up an archery range or repairing guns, you were making huge strides towards minimizing the chance of post-traumatic growth problems and suicide problems.
Why? Because they're not,
I really
they're not stuck in,
believe that.
They're not stuck in neutral with all that time to.
No.
Because you know what, that a technique, a mental health technique, that a lot of Vietnam veterans practice was come home, don't talk about it, take your uniform off, stuff it in the closet, don't go near the door, go get a job, put your head down, and go work.
But that's because they had no choice.
Right.
I mean,
but that's a technique.
Your hands were tied.
That's a technique that they used, and that's the monkeys.
Yeah.
You know, keep the monkeys in the cage. Don't let the son of a bitches out. Don't go near the latch on the cage, right? Because, as he said, once they get out,
a whole lot didn't survive that.
Right.
You know, a whole lot had meant immense problems over the next 50 years. But nowadays, I really believe that talking about it and exploring things and doing the exact things we're talking about, look into franchises, look into automobile repair, look into sun tanning studios, look into all these things and explore
sun tanning.
And find something that you're interested in, you know.
Sun tanning studios? Where the hell did that come from?
Well, they're franchises.
Oh, okay. All right.
You know, I mean, I don't give a shit if it's a pancake franchise, you know.
Okay.
Go find something you're interested in and get involved with it and begin to get your brain wrapped around that. And I'm absolutely convinced that if you can get a vet looking at that, you're going to minimize those chances of the problems with the mental health stuff. And it's a matter of figuring out what the opportunity is and then bingo. We got some badly wounded vets, double amputees and stuff. And now they got a pretty good pension and everything, but they've been gotten involved in going out running these obstacle courses and traveling around the country and doing, you know, hand crank marathons and stuff like this. And they're passionate about it and their heart and soul is in it. Doesn't necessarily make a lot of money for them, but it's got their mind occupied and doing something besides sitting in a goddamn dark room feeling sorry for yourself. That ain't going to solve nothing, and meds and drugs are not going to do it for you.
All right, here's an email for you. Hey, Mac, ask Bob about the number of programs that are out there. You guys touched on it. You named a few of them. But I think if anybody goes out and begins to look at these things, there are so many programs for veterans that can point you in the right direction that are willing to help you get there. It's crazy. And then once you identify the sector that you want to head towards, if you plug into Veterati, you find people that are in the sector, possibly in the area that you want to live in, that can help you in very specific ways. Talk about that.
Absolutely. Remember, there's something like 45,000 nonprofits out there. supposedly helping wounded vets. So it takes a little bit of sorting through. But you could start with the big names like Yellow Ribbon Fund and Semper Fi, and you can talk to people there. But there's the ones that have created camps and retreats for veterans that are also a good source of information. Boulder Crest, who you've interviewed several times, Tim Maxwell and Semper Max Farms down in Virginia. Travis Mills runs a big resort up in Maine for wounded veterans. There's one on the east coast of Maryland on the Chesapeake called Patriot Point is doing something similar. So you can talk to those guys. And then there's the ones like Wounded Warriors can help vets get a direction. Wounded Warriors are a big supporter of 100 entrepreneurs. They've been great working with us. But just pick up the phone and call somebody in one of those places and talk to them. I'm not going to talk to anybody all the time. You know, there's not a week that goes by I don't get a couple of calls from vets. I'm just looking to bounce an idea off somebody. And I'd rather do that than get entangled in some crazy government program right away. Explore what's out there in the nonprofit sector and talk to those people because, you know, these wars have been going on 18 years now. We've learned something.
Right. No, I would echo that in terms of one of the things when you begin to look at transitioning, to me, your GI Bill, especially relative to vocational training, is a lot more flexible than you may think. Right. So when you get involved with these different organizations and the training that they'll do, you know, the GI Bill will cover, you know, a lot of that. And key to that is the living stipend that comes with it, as well as maybe the cost of the program. And so again, do your homework. But I think what Bob is talking about is really important, and that is becoming animated about the future. To me, you know, where we veterans have the biggest problem is we don't know how we're going to pay the bills, and I don't want to be a loser, and I've done well in my life, but I'm struggling with this transition. And as Bob said, you know, what do you figure out what you're passionate about, and then begin to look at the different organizations that will help you. And again, that's step one in post-combat related mental health, is having a positive outlook for the future.
Let me give you an example. We got a wounded vet that showed up at Walter Reed 5 months ago, double above knee amputee. And he was at my class on Tuesday. Believe it or not, he walked into class and up the stairs in his prosthetic legs. And he wasn't wounded, injured, 3 weeks before I met him for the first time. And lo and behold, he started talking to me about possibly starting an automobile repair business. And now he's at the stage where him and his wife are actually looking at buying one, probably going to be down in Georgia or something like that. From almost the day of his injury, he's beginning to plot, what is he going to do? Now, he's a double amputee. But this guy, I'll guarantee he's going to be successful. Because he's not sitting there brooding what happened to him. He's sitting there planning, how am I going to be successful? And once again, Mac, dollars are the least important piece. If he's got an auto repair restoration business that he's excited about and doing it, and he's getting a few bucks in, so he's ahead of the game, he's going to do well with that.
Right.
And wellness is not measured in dollars. It's measured in a million other directions.
But it's
and
a huge...
You just know this guy is going to make it work. And you know what he was doing at lunch? He was leaning over talking to some other vets with wounds and how to help them.
Right.
So, you know, that's what works. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you jokingly asked about whether vets are doing medical math. I've had a couple that have gotten into it. I got one that actually is reasonably successful right now. It's a tough field to get into, but if that's your gig, go do it.
Well, if you like being a farmer and you want to be in an emerging sector of the economy, then it's certainly a crop that merits your scrutiny.
Technology, a lot get into computers. A lot get into, you know, you don't realize the computer skills all these young kids have, but it's pretty goddamn awesome. And there's a million and one options you can go doing that kind of stuff. And we've had some get into the cybersecurity field, and they end up being subcontractors of the government here in the D.C. area.
If you want to, go into one of the fastest growing fields in the country, other than marijuana agriculture, cybersecurity is a huge problem.
Oh, it's huge.
Huge, and it's growing.
And the government is having a tough time getting hands around it, and you know, every day is a new direction.
Right. Right.
But the opportunities are abound out there. There's an awful lot of franchises that will help veterans, and some of them really make sense. And the beauty of a franchise is you go in with, you get the Marine Corps guidebook there to start. So you're not floundering around making every decision on your own. You've got guidelines.
My guest for the last hour has been Bob Nielsen. Let me, I've got one more email question, sir, and then I'll let you proceed on with your morning. Are you in Annapolis? Where are you today?
No, I'm home on the Eastern Shore of Maryland. I was at Walter Reed Monday. I did my class in Bethesda on Tuesday. Yesterday, I was in D.C. having lunch with this psychiatrist and judge, and we were both immensely involved in helping wounded veterans. And today, I decided to stay in my stomping ground on the Eastern Shore.
There you go. Well deserved.
And I'm just kind of checking on parents of Marine lieutenants to make sure they feed them properly. So I want to make sure that there's enough food put in the kitchen so the poor young kid doesn't have to go to the mess hall to get leftovers.
He's so going to get crushed for that. here's an email. Mac, one of the things I've heard Bob talk about in the past when he talked about opportunity at Turner was that Marines don't necessarily see their leadership abilities translating into construction. And so there's fields out there that desperately need us, but we may not see them as career options because we're not quote unquote construction guys. Could he talk about that? Yeah, I thought that was
exactly right.
That was interesting.
I was talking to a Marine lieutenant this morning about exactly that situation. What the hell do you do in the Marine Corps when you're a platoon commander or a company commander? Is you put a goddamn team together and train to go do something. It's usually 12,000 miles away on the other side of the earth. You got to figure out how you're going to get there, how you're going to do it, how you're going to feed your people. Well, it's the same thing we do, building projects. And if you're in the Air Force or the Air Wing or you're in the Army, you do the same thing. Slightly different version, but you do the same thing. So you're figuring out how to execute something, get it done, which guys in your unit you can rely on, which guys are shitheads, which ones can do certain jobs, which ones are good with technology. And so you're doing the same thing. Well, that's a wonderful set of skills, and you can bring that to the construction industry and apply it. And, you know, as I jokingly say, if you can walk and chew gum at the same time, you can build a construction project. But it's the stuff that you've learned in the military as leadership, enlisted or officer, is invaluable. And that's what we look for.
All right. It's interesting how the transition piece is tied into the mental health piece. And
absolutely. Yeah. They're so connected, it's amazing. And, you know, I've helped all sorts of people. I helped Barney Barnum once upon a time when he was still in the Marine Corps and stuff like that. I've helped all sorts of people transition out, not certain of what they were going to do, but they found something they could become passionate about.
No, and again, I think that all those things that when you know, I think if you don't do it well, what happens is you begin to flounder. And
right.
And then I think you begin to focus inward. And that's not a good place for a lot of people, especially, you know, because your demons are in the monkey cage back there. And then
yep.
You start spending too much time in the monkey cage or near the monkey cage, and then maybe one day you let the monkeys out, and then you deal with that, and then it's kind of a
what I'm finding, Mac, with the classes I do, and almost everybody in my class is still in the tail end of their enlistment,
right.
is sometimes 3-4 years before they bite the bullet and make the move. Not necessarily get out. They've already gotten out. But before they decide to do the business thing that they were thinking about. It takes a while for the ideas to germinate and catch on, and it takes a while for you to develop the belief in yourself that you can do it.
Right.
But an amazing amount, 3, 4, 5 years, give me a call then and say, Bob, remember that day you talked about starting a construction company? Well, damn it, I want to try it.
Oh, well, no, you know what, probably in 2 years, one of the things I've learned the most about relative to post-traumatic growth is avoiding that period of time when you flounder. And again, when you compare the path that veterans travel today with the path that veterans travel when Bob started in the 1960s, it is night and day in terms of the number of people that are looking for you, the number of people that are willing to help you. And so the need to flounder is no longer there. There's not a real good reason. Much more signs
directing you to opportunities.
Right.
And you just got to be smart enough to read the signs.
Well said. And what happens is when you talk to, people that are floundering or however you want to define that, and I don't say that with any editorial comment, I don't. I say it with great compassion, as a matter of fact, because I floundered in my life.
Let me give you a quick example,
sure.
Mac. We had an Army lieutenant came back that discharged out of Afghanistan, had a Bronze Star, he'd done good, he was well thought of in the Army, and he got out in 2008, 2009 during the recession. And he couldn't find a job. So he was intrigued with somehow the green movement and the environment. And he ended up creating something called Veterans Compost here in Washington, D.C. and now Baltimore. And essentially, with used trailers and very small scale, started picking up waste at hospitals and restaurants, food waste, and taking it and composting it and selling it in nursery gardens for high-end compost. And now he's got something like 25 people working for him. He's going like gangbusters. He's got 2 locations, one in Virginia, one in Maryland, and he did this because he expected to come out as an Army lieutenant and have 25 job offers for him. They weren't there, so he went and did something on his own. And he's the leading green waste recycler in the whole goddamn area. Now, tell me, how great is that? And the guy loves it, and he's his own boss.
Do you think so? Let me finish with this. So if I was to ask you the path, would you say that most guys get out and most, veterans get out? Guys is a unisex term. I'm not discriminating. Most veterans get out and they go to work for somebody, find that they're not happy. And then, as you said, within 3 to 5 years, they're looking to do something.
Yeah.
That's more likely the path.
That's relatively common because they take the first job that's offered to them because it's relatively secure, and they get the wife stops complaining because they got a paycheck coming in.
Right.
But they're unhappy as shit, and they have to mull it over for a couple of years. That's very, very common.
Okay. And that makes sense to all of us. As Bob said, if you can get a head start on it and you can start focusing a couple of years out on your transition – there's so many people out there that are willing to help you. And again,
absolutely.
And then I think both of us would say, it's hard to grow when you're worried about paying your bills, right? And so that's a huge step to your post-combat mental health. It's a huge step to, and I think one of the keys that I've learned about post-combat related mental health is when you found what you want to do, And you're happy, right? Your problems don't seem as big. And then one of the things that happens when you get to that place, and you still deal with your shit, but you begin to help other people. You just talked about that vet,
absolutely,
right, who showed up and double amputee, and now at lunch she's talking to other vets about how to help them and do other things. When you begin to help other people, it is one of the biggest curves because that's what you've done in your life. You've taken care of others, and that's how life makes sense to you when you've lived a life where service is important and it's not simply about making money. And all of a sudden you're back in a familiar place doing familiar things, and you seem to be in control of your life, and I think that's a huge step in terms of post-traumatic growth. And
Mac, I have no statistics to prove this, but I'll guarantee you that every one of the 230, 240 vets or caregivers that we've had start a business is out there helping other vets. I know that for a fact. I can't prove it, but I know it for a fact. And helping other vets becomes contagious.
You know, and it's amazing, though, as we've been talking, how intertwined post-combat related mental health is with your happiness and with finding something that you're passionate about. There's a piece.
Mac, this is the best thing I've ever done. This is a hell of a lot better than building understory buildings, you know, and working 18 hours a day worried about that shit. You know, is the crane going to fall over? We're going to drop steel today. I'd rather do this anytime. But who would have thought?
What's it feel like? You must feel like a mother, for God's sakes. But when one of your kids does good,
well, you know what it is, Mac. We underestimate the potential of these young men and women. This horseshit with the Greatest Generation was World War II is pure bullshit. It's Tom Brokaw hogwash. These young kids right now that have come out of this war are absolutely spectacular. And when you see them go out and accomplish something, you know, shit, I feel like a grandfather 10 times over. And it's wonderful. And all you've done is realign the skills that they have so that it can help benefit somebody and put it in a form that somebody can know and appreciate. You know, you haven't invented anything. You haven't created penicillin or anything like that. You've taken all the ingredients that are there and slightly rearranged them so they can go out and make something happen. And, you know, Wolverine Radio is doing this every day.
Preaching the gospel. But you know, it's amazing, though, all the different paths that people have traveled to reach a similar place, and the number of emails that I get saying, I wish, you know, years ago that I'd heard this stuff. Because, one, when it comes from our tribe, it sounds different. It sounds different. And, oh, by the way, you and Musselman and the different people, you guys sound like a whole bunch of Lance Corporals talking shit. But you call bullshit on stuff.
But that's what's right.
Right. And he said, but you guys call bullshit on bullshit. And then you also, you shove us, just like a sergeant would shove a Lance Corporal through a doorway and say, go get him, stud. You shove us through things. And it's a comfortable place, our tribal place, and that's what makes me most happy about the whole Allmarine Radio thing. It has become, for a lot of people, a tribal place and a warm place. And then, you know, 2 weeks ago or so when I had Ronnie Reyes on, who's a Gold Star son, and he sent me an email afterwards.
Yeah, he was great.
After I chewed his ass out about him saying they accepted me and they da da da, and I said, listen, goddammit, you're a part of the tribe, okay? You can check out anytime you want. You're never leaving because you belong to us. He sent me the nicest email and said, I don't think I really realized that I was part of the tribe. I said, well, you are.
True.
You are, motherfucker. You ain't getting away from us. I said, and it was really cool. What are those guys, what's their reaction when somebody points at you and says, this is Ronnie Reyes' kid? He said, oh, they lose their shit. I said,
yeah.
That's because we own you.
It's absolutely true.
That's cool.
He was fabulous, and that was such an astounding story. It was unbelievable.
Oh, no, the part that when he told, you know, when you hear those kids that are Gold Star kids from Vietnam, when you hear them say, until I joined this group, I had never made a Father's Day card. And then you hear Ronnie say that at my, you know, my mom told me that at my father's funeral, they had a piece, it was open casket, they had a piece of glass over the upper part of his body that was exposed. She laid me on the glass because she knew that's the closest I'd ever be to my father.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, you hear that, and it literally, it just takes your breath away.
one last thing. Your interview with Ken Rogers in that goddamn documentary he did, Bravo, Uncommon Valor, Common Men, is one of the most incredible pieces I've ever seen in my life. It absolutely gave me goosebumps and shivers and crying when I watched it, but boy, it's unbelievable.
You know what? And I'll tell you what, if you've watched it, go back and watch it again, and you'll see it differently. In fact, I watched it again.
It took me 6 weeks to get the courage to watch it the first time, because I heard it on your show,
yeah,
and then I watched it, and I said, Jesus Christ.
It's the single best documentary I've ever seen about
okay,
that
on a serious note, Mac, you got to pay more attention to feeding your kids. I think I'm getting a text from your daughter that the refrigerator's kind of empty.
She can shut her yap, too.
Maybe some cold Chinese food or something, you know. I mean, you know, a couple of bowl of noodles or something, you know.
All right. They're going to get their asses PT'd when they get home. All right, sir, first of all, no way I could ever thank you enough for the kind of mentor you've been for me and the support that you've given to All Marine Radio. So on behalf of a lot of different people that come here on a daily basis, this is one of the guys who's been hugely instrumental in making All Marine Radio what it is and keeping it pointed in the right direction. So thank you very much.
We got to keep getting the message out.
All right, bud. All right, have a great day. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Yep, there you have it.
Take care. Bye-bye.
The one and only, St. Robert the First. Yeah, what's up with my kid ratting me out? Musselman, next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt. Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.